Greetings and welcome once again, all of you critical thinkers out there, to Throttle Up. This is a radio show and podcast that showcases critical thinking and complex problem solving. The reason for us doing that is to make your lives better, is to bring more enjoyment, perhaps, more productivity, and certainly more accomplishments to your lives through the employment of critical thinking. The show is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. Now, also, this is a special edition of Throttle Up. It's actually a special edition part two. We started this last week because of the pressing need to do so. And so this is a special edition entitled Critical Thinking in Complex Environments, part two. And in it, we're going to be discussing or continuing our discussion of what we started last week. This show is designed to inform, delimit, empower, and amaze. I think I've already said that. And I am your host, Captain Kevin Smith, U.S. Navy retired, and I am a naval aviator and pioneer in the field of critical thinking and high-velocity reason, as well as what all of that means. My experience goes all the way back to the time of early supersonic flight. And primarily in the field, I spent primarily, of course, I had a career in aviation, but I was also involved in a number of rather interesting and extremely important design projects. And so I got to employ critical thinking in many aspects of our modern industrial society. And so armed with that knowledge, I would like to pass that on and to acquaint everyone with the power of critical thinking and how it can improve our power of reason as we go forward into our lives and work and enjoy a productive life. Our tagline for the show is Accelerate Beyond the Ordinary. Our motto is to employ high-velocity reason to achieve high-octane performance. And our mission statement is to provide our listening audience with a relatively easy yet effective way to strengthen our power of reason through the employment of critical thinking. Now, I guess, okay, so this is fairly significant. Now, our website is throttleupradio.com. And again, it's throttleupradio.com, all one word. And the reason why I think it's important here is because the podcasts for the show are now available for offline listening or for on-demand listening through the website. And if you go to the website, you pretty well find it, the podcast. And so a lot of them are available, and of course, the special editions will be available too. Now, eventually, it'll be available on other platforms, and we're still working on that. We haven't quite got that up and running, but it should be fairly soon where you could find it on other platforms as well. Okay, so let me finish this introduction. We'll get right into the show, which I think is going to be not only important, but I think it's going to be of interest to many, many of you out there in the listening audience. So the audio engineering services are provided by Evergroove Studios, and they are located in Evergreen, Colorado, and they help us out. Each and every week, we have them assist us in being able to provide the highest quality audio available. They're a great group of folks. I would heartily encourage you to contact them if you need any kind of audio services, whether or not you are in radio or doing a podcast or music or whatever. They are great to work with. And you can find them on the web. I actually don't. I meant to have their phone number available for the show, and I just slipped my mind. I don't have it on my notes right here. But anyway, it's Evergrew Studios. You can find them on the website, or go to Google them, and you can find them. Also, media services. I want to talk a little bit about media services. Now, if you are a speaker, author, or presenter, like myself, now you need to get in touch with my graphics artist, Jennifer. She's a great gal. And you can visit her website, which I would encourage you to do, for any kind of media services. Her website is standouthandouts.com. That's standouthandouts.com, one word. And she can help you out with any kind of media services. Also, a particularly good set of handout materials to organize your efforts or your company or whatever you're doing. Also, you know, it is not just for corporations or companies, but it's also, I think her services are very worthwhile for individual proprietorships and also for authors and speakers. You'll find that she does a great job with all kinds of media support. All right, so all aboard the Throttle Up Express. This is a place where all critical thinkers are welcome with open arms. Now, normally our show is organized into three parts, but this is a special edition. So the special edition, part two, is particularly important now. And the reason for that is because of the Future of Jobs report. That was recently produced by the World Economic Forum, and the Future of Jobs report stated that by the year 2020, critical thinking and complex problem solving will be the skill sets most in demand by the global job market, but also the most difficult to fulfill. And so that justifies this show, and it justifies also what we are planning to do for last week and this week. We are going to be talking about that in some measure of detail, hopefully meaningful detail, without getting overly technical. So we are going to be talking about that and how it applies to us and how it also factors into our current situation in this country economically, and how they all fit together into some kind of a coherent whole where we can then begin to deal with it effectively. And that's you and me. Now, we're going to explore this together. And we're going to be able to, hopefully, we're going to be able to deal with this in a meaningful way and to utilize the information that we have and the knowledge that we gain to make our lives better. All right, so that completes this section. Now let us proceed on to this special edition. Okay, welcome back to the special edition of Throttle Up. And the special edition, this is the second part. So we're going to be continuing our discussion of critical thinking in complex environments. This is part two of that, which began last week. And we're going to be, because this is a special edition, this will be playing from time to time on the radio show on Red State Talk Radio. And also it's available on our podcast, which you can find right now through our website, throttleupradio.com. And so you can listen to this podcast on demand. And I would highly recommend that, because it is rather important and timely that we discuss this in some kind of meaningful way. Anyway, so this part two section of Critical Thinking Complex Environments deals with or focuses in on the world of the solutions provider. We're going to be talking about that. What does that mean, and how does that apply to us, and what does that do for us as we go forward? And I think it's pretty important. All right, so there are four things we're going to be talking about, if we can fit them all in. The first thing we're going to be talking about is the booming economy and new business opportunities, as well as, and we mentioned this earlier, as well as how this and the future of jobs report, how this converges in on something that can propel us forward. The second thing we're going to be discussing is a Q&A with a solutions provider. Now, that's going to be fairly interesting and kind of fun to listen to. And item three, we're going to be talking a little bit about this thing called design thinking. Now, design thinking is an aspect of critical thinking directed at trying to develop or trying to formulate a particular solution to a set of problems. So it's really applied critical thinking, if you will. And we're going to be talking about the design thinking and the design thinking initiative, what it means, how do we use it, and what are its strengths and weaknesses. And there are some important things that we can learn about it going forward, and there are important aspects of it that we can use. There are certain things that we need to be cautious about, because it does have some weaknesses also, which is that it's really not a criticism. Most of these new initiatives are always, or let's put it this way. We can consider most of these new initiatives to be a work in progress. We can also consider what we're doing to be a work in progress, because it's not the end all. We can consider critical thinking to be a work in progress, which it is. We are learning new things all the time about critical thinking, or applied critical thinking, or particularly in the area of complex problem solving. We're learning new things all the time about how to make complex problem solving more efficient, more effective, more useful, or if you want to use technical terms, how we can derive higher levels of utility from its answers. Okay, so that's more or less the outline of the show for this special edition in this week. The purpose of the special edition, like I say, is to provide our listening audience through this radio show and podcast with not just the latest news, which you can get in a lot of places, but things that you can use in your daily lives that can make your lives better, to enable you to seek new opportunities, or perhaps transform your existing business into a new business model, emphasizing solutions over things. Now, solutions and things are not the same and may or may not coexist. Sometimes innovative solutions may exist entirely outside the box, as great thinkers such as Colonel John Boyd have repeatedly stressed. Now, an extremely effective solution can be nothing more than a preoperative checklist, as Dr. Gawande discovered, which not only solved the rising deaths due to surgery problem, but proved exceptionally effective beyond all expectations. Furthermore, SAP, IBM, and a host of other companies, big name companies, are now stressing solutions over things, and providing solutions to pressing customer problems is their new business model. More and more companies are following this business model. Now, a big part of this new business model initiative is design thinking. We talked about that, which is critical thinking directed at a particular institutional problem. Design thinking puts the customer first and intends to provide solutions to customer problems that enhance the total customer experience. Now, my experience with complex problem solving was introduced in part one. And as I mentioned in part one, I was involved in a major effort to solve a serious and mission-critical problem facing the airline industry in the early 1990s. We finally discovered and implemented a set of solutions, but only after much trial and error. In that process, I learned a lot of things about problem solving, which I wanted to pass on to all of you. Okay, so let me now talk about the booming economy. All right, so we wanted to sort of like introduce all of this stuff with a brief discussion of what we call the booming economy and what does it mean to us. All right, so let me say a few words about that. In this here, I'm taking a rather interesting article that appeared in the weekend edition of the Wall Street Journal. Now, this is the Saturday and Sunday, March 10th, 11th, weekend edition, 2018 of the Wall Street Journal. And the front, top of the front page, hiring boom draws workers back. Now, in that article, they talk about employers added jobs at the fastest pace in a year and a half, largely hiring workers off the sidelines of the labor force and boosting job growth in nearly every sector. The major job growth areas, I'll just point out a few here, which brings some substance to that statement. Of course, construction saw a lot of growth. Also, retail trade showed surprising amount of growth. Excuse me. Also, professional and business services, durable goods, and financial activities. All of those showed surprising strong growth. Now, the labor force increase also kept unemployment steady at 4.1% and is a likely factor in keeping wage growth in check. Now, okay, I'm not sure that is all, to me, that's all, you know, rosy. I do think that the rising economy ought to translate into, you know, improved quality of life for most of us most of us Americans that we consider ourselves to be either part of the workforce or recently retired and pursuing a second career or a second vocation or whatever, or doing what I do, which is get involved in things that I love to do, which is being an author and being a speaker, being a radio show host, and stuff like that. I love to do that stuff, and I enjoy it immensely. And I'm sure many of you do the same. Okay, so armed with that knowledge, what can we do about it? All right, is this just like casual, nice to know information, or does it have something meaningful for us? And I would, well, meaningful for us and meaningful for the country. So now I would say the latter. I would say that it is not just a casual thing. I think it has deep meaning. And that's, I guess you could say that's one of the reasons for the show, is to go beyond the headlines and to talk about it in some kind of a meaningful way so that we can improve our power of reason. We can improve our understanding, our comprehension of what does this all mean for us today and going forward in our lives, individually, lives of our family, our community, our state, and our country. All right. So with that in mind, what I wanted to do is I wanted to, and we began this last week, but I wanted to sort of like, nail this thing down and discuss in some kind of a meaningful way, what does it mean for us with this improved economic growth? Is it just that, or is something else going on within the business community, if you will, or within the economy of the United States? And I would propose that something else is going on that is not well discussed, it is not well known, but it is more important than just these economic indicators that I just talked about. And what's going on is a rather interesting thing. It goes by a number of names, so it's a little bit hard to get your arms around it, but let me give it a shot here. It is the desire for, or the actual creation of, a new business model. And what is that? A new business model, as it is a response to what has been now called, or being called, the Fourth Industrial Revolution. All right, so the Fourth Industrial Revolution brings us into the new intellectual frontier, and the new intellectual frontier is stressing a couple of things. The first and foremost, it's stressing the ability to solve problems, or complex problem solving is now the key. That's part of this new intellectual frontier. The ability, the high level of competence in the area of complex problem solving is now the most important aspect of our business community. Why is that? Because things are becoming more and more complex. We need to be able to solve problems in a increasingly complex environment. And so complex problem solving is a key to our success as an individual, as a company, as an enterprise, and as a country. That is one, I would say, it is the key to our continued success, is the high level of competence in the field of critical, of complex problem solving. Okay, so what is a solution provider? A solution provider is one that is skilled in complex problem solving and can provide effective solutions to complex problems. All right, so what's the best way to get involved in this discussion, get into this discussion in some kind of meaningful way? And what I thought I would do is to have a Q&A session with a solutions provider, if you will. So we're going to have this Q&A session, which brings to the forefront what we mean by being a solutions provider, in just a moment, right after this quick break. Okay, welcome back. This is a special edition of Throttle Up, and we're going to be talking about critical thinking in complex environments, and what does that mean, what it means for us is the ability to solve complex problems. In other words, to provide solutions to complex problems that are plaguing industry or even our personal lives. It doesn't matter. It applies across the board. So here is this section is a question and answer session with a solutions provider. Now, this is a bit hypothetical, but I thought that this would be a good way to introduce this whole idea with a Q&A session. Now, the following, like I said, is a Q&A session with an individual who has a new type of job description, and this is referred to as a solutions provider. The time frame here is sometime in the near future. The conditions are most enterprises are adopting a new business model that stresses the ability to provide solutions to a customer's most pressing problems instead of selling things such as components, paraphernalia, gadgets, or units, all more or less operating independently. So the code word here is solutions instead of things. In other words, to sell the customer solutions instead of just selling the customer things. All right, so the Q&A goes as follows. Question. This is from the, let's say that this is some media person is doing a Q&A session with this solutions provider. So the question from the media person, thank you for agreeing to this interview. Tell us a little bit about yourself. Answer, certainly. I represent a growing list of individuals referred to as solution providers. I am a veteran, having served in a similar capacity in the military, although this is not a prerequisite, since a number of solution providers I know are not veterans. I received specialized training in this new field or discipline and participated in a number of real-life problem-solving initiatives before receiving my certification. Question, tell us, what is a solution provider? Answer, certainly. A solution provider is a member of a new type of business that focuses on providing customers with solutions to their most pressing problems that are not only challenging, but are literally not possible to solve internally to the organization due to high levels of complexity and uncertainty that has or will occur within the customer's operating environment. Can you give us some examples? Answer, yes. Most medium and large-scale businesses operating either occasionally or full-time in environments that could be considered complex are in play. Examples are all major airlines, package delivery services, railroads, shipping, cruise lines, much of the petroleum industry, especially oil platforms, medium and large manufacturing enterprises, much of agriculture, the medical industry, especially surgery, and the list goes on and on. Question, and what do you do? Answer, as a solutions provider, after initial contact with a customer, I set up an initial meeting in which I bring with me a handout which describes the inquiry and discovery process. This is extremely important because most individuals and organizations do not know or utilize such a process. By amplifying our power of reason, which the process does, we must and will discover three very important things. One, what is the problem for which we are seeking a solution? Two, what is the most likely solution to the problem that will give us the greatest benefit? And three, what does an early prototype of the solution look like? All right, so contrary to almost all of our traditional education and training, the discovery and inquiry process is the most important thing, far more important than any so-called product that we want to sell. As a solutions company employing solution providers such as myself, our most important service to the customer is to clarify the problem, find ways to master complexity, and map out a clear direction by which we will discover the solution through innovation. Question, why do you do that? Answer, well, we actually don't hand the customer a solution on a silver platter, right? We don't do that. That's not something that a highly trained solution provider does. What the solution provider wants to do is the solution provider wants to bring the customer into the problem-solving process, because the customer must own the solution. The customer must achieve intellectual ownership of any solution formulated. Otherwise, without this all-important ownership, the solution will not work. Question. So, problem discovery is most important. Answer. Yes, it is. Emphatically so. Problem discovery comes first, which I call clarify the actual, which means what actually is the situation, not what we want the situation to be, so we can apply our favorite solution. We don't want to do that. We must not close the door to innovation. In other words, the problem definition should not be a thinly, vaguely guised attempt to provide a solution, our favorite solution. So it must be a pure episode here. Now, is this easy to do? To what we call, what we talked about is clarify the actual, which means what is the actual problem? Is this easy to do? And the answer is surprisingly, no, it is not. Assuming that we are dealing with a complex situation existing within a complex environment, clarifying the actual problem through the discovery process is quite difficult and must not be left to an ad hoc process. It must, however, follow a coherent process of inquiry and discovery such that we can avoid the quagmire of complexity and be confident that the problem we have discovered is the actual problem that must be dealt with. Question, anything else? Answer, yes. Once the process of inquiry and discovery is understood by all, then we must, as active members of this mission team, one, develop our own mission statement. So going forward, we must have a mission statement. Now, normally this is not done, and that is a shortcoming in a lot of efforts and initiatives. We have got to be a lot more disciplined than that. We have to be a lot more analytical than that. First thing we need is to create our own mission statement going forward. Item two, we must clarify our major mission objectives. What are they? What are we trying to accomplish as we go forward? Number three, secure all necessary resources. That, of course, is a given. And item four is set up the information dissemination process. So we need to also not only come up with a solution to this most pressing problem, but we need to be able to communicate it to all concerned. Okay, so what are we trying to do here? And this is, of course, applicable really across the board. Whenever, and I use this all the time, and I would say that it is extremely useful, what I'm going to be presenting here across the board, really for any endeavor. And that is what I call problem space awareness. Now, problem space awareness, or in military terms, battle space awareness, is the key to success in any efforts involving the formulation of a solution. Must not proceed unless problem space awareness is achieved. So when we begin to clarify the actual, when we begin to write our problem definition, we need to also include the problem space in which the solution resides, or which the problem exists, and develop the problem space awareness is key. Once we achieve that, then we can go forward with brainstorming our solution, but not until. We have to achieve problem space awareness first. And that is the key to success, and that is why solution providers exist. Solution providers exist not to give you a solution on a silver platter. Solution providers exist to encourage each and every one of us to make sure that we achieve, first and foremost, problem space awareness. Now, you can do this in any aspect of your lives, in any business engagements that you might have, anything. You look at something, you read an article, you try to understand what's going on in whatever sector or whatever part of the culture, whatever aspect of this modern industrial society we live in. We try to understand it, and let's do this together. Let's try to understand the problem with respect to problem space awareness. So if somebody says to you, oh, we ought to raise the minimum wage, the answer to that should be, okay, what is the problem that you are trying to deal with? And are we aware of the problem space? The problem space being the business environment or the national economy and stuff like that. So let us not proceed until we achieve problem space awareness. Now, this is where most treatments fall short. Unfortunately so, and I guess you could say that's one of the reasons for Throttle Up existing, is to point out. And of course, I learned this through experience, you know, the school of hard knocks, if you will. If we don't understand the problem, any attempts at a solution is just simply not going to work, unless we want to rely on strictly chance or luck or good luck. If and of course, my response is good luck with that. It's probably not going to work. And 99% of the time, it's not going to work. All right. So this is where most treatments fall short. We must achieve problem space awareness. It is one of the keys to success. I would say it's the most important aspect of success. And you remember I said this before on maybe a number of shows. This episode with Einstein is true or not. I'm assuming it is. Someone asked him one time if he had an hour to save the world, what would he do? And he said, well, I would spend of 50 to 55 minutes on defining the problem, and all, and the rest of the time it just simply a simple mathematics. So he thought the problem definition or problem clarification was the most important thing in any efforts to solve a problem. All right, so problem space awareness is key. And this is where solution providers have their greatest impact on the industry, is to achieve, for one and all, to achieve problem space awareness. Now, in a project that I was working on some years ago, everyone knew what the problem was and were ready to implement their favorite solution. The problem, The trouble was that everyone's understanding of the problem was incomplete, misleading, and wrong. Problem space awareness was not only not achieved, we were well along the way from achieving it. Problem space awareness and clarification is a formal deliverable, or it ought to be. Okay, and in any problem solving initiative, the first order of business is to achieve problem space awareness. And that ought to be a formal report that is produced by this Tiger team or this mission team. So problem space awareness is a formal deliverable and is presented to the customer. And they must achieve buy-in before the solution phase begins. All right, so let me say that again because that's pretty important. And I'm going to repeat myself for emphasis. Problem space awareness is a formal deliverable to the customer, and they must achieve buy-in to it before, in other words, the customer needs to achieve problem space awareness as well. And they must buy into that before the solution phase begins. Problem space awareness must be achieved by all members of the mission team before proceeding into the solution phase. That goes without saying. Concept formulation, that is the specification of a candidate solution most likely to solve the problem efficiently and effectively, is the next challenge to the mission team. But that challenge goes after the first challenge is dealt with and overcome, which is to achieve problem space awareness. Okay, and then we are going to talk a little bit about the inquiry and discovery process after a quick break. Okay, welcome back to Throttle Up, special edition part two on critical thinking and critical thinking in complex environments. Now, here I want to talk a little bit about this thing that we introduced last week, which is, it goes by the term of design thinking. Now, I didn't come up with that. It's been around a while. I think it was pioneered by Stanford University, if I remember right. But anyway, so it's out there. It's kind of like a big thing now in pretty much all across industry. Certainly in the, you know, in the software industry, it's a big thing, and it's also probably permeating into other industries as well. All right, so what is it? So I guess you would ask me and you would say, okay, Kevin, what is design thinking? We've been talking about critical thinking for a long time, and now you're throwing something else in the mix. What does it all mean? Well, as I said before, critical thinking and design thinking are very, very similar. You can think of it this way. I'm using a lot of thinking terms here, but consider it this way. Design thinking is an aspect of critical thinking. Design thinking employs, or it ought to employ, critical thinking directed for a certain initiative or a set of initiatives, or directed toward a certain problem or group of problems. Now, here's what some people say about it, and so I've extracted some of this information I'm going to pass along to you from a software company called SAP. And in their discussions of design thinking, they say the following. We use design thinking for our customers and help you realize your future through technology, so we can help the world run better and improve people's lives. So, what is the design thinking model? The design thinking model contains three elements to it. All right. The first one is people. People are at the heart of innovation. The second aspect of it is process. And the third aspect is places. So it's people, process, and places. Again, people. Now let me find this in my notes. Oh, here it is. Okay, so people, driven by empathy with respect to the end user. That's what they mean by people. People want to understand who is using the product. They want to empathize with the end user, understand the end user in a way to bring value to the lives of the end user. The process is to get to the root of the problem and optimistically pursue the problem-solving process. And the place is the place that the design thinking team exists. What place do they live in? Is it a place where risk taking is encouraged or discouraged? So again, it is people, process, and places. So under people, we talk about empathy. We try to empathize with the people. We collaborate with people, bring together diverse perspectives to unlock the potential for innovation. And of course, optimism, which is to be willing to take risks. Okay, so with that in mind, we're going to segue just a bit into what we have been talking about before, which is the inquiry and discovery process. What exactly is that? And why did the solutions provider that we heard earlier in the Q&A session, why did the solutions provider bring that to his first meeting? Why was that so important? The inquiry and discovery process is vital to this whole process. We do not go in there with a pre-formulated set of solutions. We don't go in there in an intellectually arrogant way. We go in there in a open-minded fashion. We enter into this situation with intellectual integrity and intellectual honesty and humility, and we first and foremost say, I don't really know what the solution is. Let's not pretend that I do, or let's not pretend that anyone knows what the solution is. Let us go through this process of inquiry and discovery. And what is it? Well, let me just go through this briefly as we get to the end of the show. and this is pretty important, and this works for any endeavor. This works for anyone who is involved in critical thinking, anyone who is predisposed to use critical thinking in their lives, in their personal lives, in their lives of, you know, their business lives. The first thing is, when we go into this process, the first thing we ask is, what type of environment does the problem exist, and in which the solution will reside? What is the type of environment? All right. It can either be normal or complex. The second thing, or the second question here in the inquiry and discovery process, what are the kinds of activities that the customer performs? Is the customer performing casual activities, or is the customer performing purposeful activities? A casual activity might be a handheld communication device that is used as a personal device by the customer, or the customer involved in a purposeful activity that requires more than just a handheld device? The employment. How does the customer employ itself or perform operationally, is another way of saying that. Does the customer do casual activities? Is the customer moderately organized in their operational activities, or is the customer highly organized? Good question. The next question here on the list of inquiry and discovery: what about changing operational conditions? Are the changing operational conditions experienced by the customer, or that could be experienced by the customer, trivial or non-trivial? If the changing operational conditions that could be experienced by the customer, or let's say that you are the customer, it could be you, the changing operational conditions, if they're non-trivial, then do situations rise to the level of events? All right. Are you having to deal with events? And furthermore, do you have to deal with, or would you be expected sometime to deal with, mission critical events? All right. That's particularly important. Once we understand the event status of the environment, the final question here is, what is the operational risk, or what could be the operational risk if we have encountered a single or a set of events or mission critical events? Is the operational risk low, moderate, or high? So does the problem bring with it risk that must be understood in order for us to manage it? So if the problem that the customer is experiencing, does that generate levels of uncertainty which can be defined as risk, risk to the mission, risk to the viability of the corporation? If it is, what is that risk level? Is it low, moderate, or high? And of course, if it is high risk, then you can begin to see what kind of solution might be necessary. Once we understand the problem, or once we achieve problem space awareness. Okay, I can see that we are coming up to the end of another Throttle Up, and we will, hopefully we've made some, or have had a meaningful discussion about this new business environment that we might be facing. So I would like to say thank you for listening. Certainly, all of you out there, and thank you for Red State Talk Radio for providing us with this opportunity. And thank you, all you veterans out there, for your service. And we will be with you next week.